Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
So a man goes into the doctor's office. He says he's depressed. He says, "Doctor, my life is not worth living." The doctor says, "Well, the treatment is simple. The great town Pagliacci is in town. Go see him. That should make you laugh." The man suddenly bursts into tears and says, "But doctor, I'm Pagliacci. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go on stage while I'm nearly delirious. Chin up. Try harder. You're just a clown. On with the show, man. Put on your white face. The people pay you and you must make them laugh. And if Harlequin should steal your Columbine, laugh. You're Pagliacci and the world will clap for you. Turn into banter all your pain and sorrow, and with your clown's face hide grief and distress. Laugh loud, Pagliacci. Forget all of your troubles. Laugh off the pains that so empoisons your heart." Now, I did a show on loss a couple of weeks ago that was very popular. You could say, well, it's amongst depressives. Don't bring me down. The world's bad enough. You think I want to talk about the health care bill? Do you think that the millions of years of evolution that has created my fine mind and my exquisite soul was created to talk about the health care bill? Well, you're sadly mistaken if that's what you expect to hear on this show today. I mean, when it comes down, yeah, I'll give you the vote. What's the difference? You know what it is. It's nothing. It's garbage. It's Obamacare Lite called Trump Care. Pre-existing conditions still in place. Kids stay on parents' life insurance until 26 years of age, still in place. Medicaid expansion, still in place. Mandate stays in place because the insurance companies can charge a 30% surcharge for people who don't have previous insurance. Mandate still in place. Huge tax breaks to big insurance companies, which hurts the rural area deplorables. 70% of the bill is Obamacare Lite. So you think I'm going to get excited about it? I told you I opposed it. I wrote a whole chapter about it in my new book, the bestseller, Trump's War. So I really don't want to talk about it. It is so boring that I have to feel that half my brain is numbed. I have to numb half my brain in order to even talk about it. And a lot of people are in pain right now, not to do with Obamacare. And that's because everyone's spinning in a circle. We elected Donald Trump, and we don't seem to be getting anything out of it. We see the psychosis of the Democrat Party, the madness of Schumer, the madness of Pelosi, the madness of Waters, the insanity of the press. And a lot of you are in pain right now saying, what the hell can I do now? We've all lost the country. That's what we've lost. We believed in this nation. We believed in the electoral system. We see the madness of the progressives expressing their loss with violence and hatred. But I didn't talk about political loss when I did that show. I talked about personal loss. And what is loss but losing that which you once possessed or thought you possessed? So let's consider what loss is. What is the greatest loss in your life? How did you cope with the loss? Be it of a loved one, a business, your pride, your dignity, your job, your promotion, your health. See, loss is part of life. Everyone thinks they're going to win from the day they're born until they die. Everyone thinks that they're like a character on television, like in Billionaire, a fraud if there ever was one. So smart, all the Wall Street guys. Meanwhile, that's why so many of them are drug addicts. All the great Wall Street geniuses, all the makers of kings, those who rip off old ladies for their insurance policies in order to stuff their faces with more fancy foods and more expensive drinks. You think they're happy? That's why they're drug addicts? But, you know, there's more to the story than that, and I'll open up the lines if you just want to do it, because I think it's an amazing story that no one wants to talk about. A lot of people lose things. I'll make it very personal for you with Colin Kaepernick. Remember him? The guy who went on his knee when the national anthem was played and how the vermin in the media celebrated that piece of garbage? Guess what happened to Colin Kaepernick? He's lingering on the free market. And teams don't want to sign this anti-American piece of garbage. He destroyed the 49ers franchise, if you want to get down to the sports arena. Or I can read you To an Athlete Dying Young by A.E. Housman, if you'd like. Still my favorite poet, Victorian poet, who dressed in black on the his birthday for his entire life because he said he cursed the day he was born. That's the kind of guy I like. I have a Mexican friend, humble man, tough as nails, had to fight his way out of the worst slums in Mexico to come here to this promised land. And he looked at me when we were showing each other pictures of our mother. And he said to me, see, mothers are very important in most cultures except in America where they're somewhat put on a shelf. And he looked at me and he said, you know, Michael, we're in hell. He said, we are living in hell. He said, our mothers are in heaven. That's where heaven is. He said, this earth is hell, he said to me. Or I could say to you, success is a stale finale. The struggle is the success, something I've quoted many times by Eugene O'Neill in his great play, The Long Day's Journey Into Night. I've quoted that many years, for 20 years. It's not just today. I am a somber guy. I go in and out of, you know, somberness. It's who I am. You sit here like a moron laughing about things. I can do that sometimes when I'm in the right mood. Or sit here and celebrate this, celebrate. I don't want to do it. I'm sick and tired of it all. Frankly, to tell you the truth, it's a bunch of garbage. The whole political system is a pile of crap. What this country needs is a revolution, frankly, and I thought we had one at the ballot box. But the vermin on the left stole our revolution from us. And they laugh at us, and they mock us, and they tell us that they're going to kill us. They tell us they're going to hurt us, and nothing happens to them because the police have been neutralized. The press is worthless. We know this. We're boiling with rage. You think I'm the only one? So when I say I'm talking about law, she said, well, what's really bothering him? And what's really bothering you is the question. Why are you distressed today out there, Mr. and Mrs. America? Don't tell me you're happy, because if you are, I don't believe you. First of all, if you want to go into what is happiness, I'd be glad to do that for you one day. I did it many times on this show. I learned when I was 18 years old from the great American Chinese poet or Chinese American poet, Lin Yu Tang, what is happiness? And I used to read his parables to myself when I was 18. Really beautiful stuff. And he made it really simple of what is happiness. Stuff like, to cut a bright red watermelon with a large sharp knife on a sunny day, is this not happiness? To hear a fly buzzing against the screen, open the screen and let the fly out, is this not happiness? To come back to your village after having been away for a long, long time and to hear the language of the people in your village being spoken and the children laughing, is this not happiness? To awaken after a long sleep in the country and feel rain on your face coming through the cabin window, is this not happiness? And stuff like that. Well, he wrote something as mundane as, if one's bowels move, one is happy. And if they don't move, one is unhappy. That is all there is to it. I mean, come on. You know, we're human beings at the end of the day. We're still part of the zoological kingdom. But we're talking not so much about personal sadness, personal happiness. I think we're talking about something deeper, which is almost an existential state of mind in America today. But I could say that. It's sort of an existential state of the loss of a nation. When you see a hateful man like Schumer pretending he's a progressive who loves people, I'll make it very political. When you see a hate monger like Maxine Waters, who because she's African-American says the most vile, hateful, hatefully imaginable things about Donald Trump, and no one says a word to her because she seems to be above reproach because she's not of the right particular, stripe? You want to put it to you that way? It makes you sick to your stomach. When you see a Muslim go on a rampage in England, and the very next day, the suicidal laborites get up and say him being Muslim has nothing to do with the acts that he committed, I would say to you, this is a mark of the death of the West. But Spengler wrote this in the 1910, 1908 era when he wrote The Death of the West, Otto Spengler. You should read Spengler again. So you understand there are certain courses in lives and certain courses in human events that are uncontrollable. It's just what is. So you say, well, we elected Donald Trump. We worked so hard. And what do you got to complain about personally, Savage? You've got a number one book. It is number one on the New York Times list without any help from anyone in the media. Certainly no one in radio. I told you yesterday, I'll repeat it again until you hear it. When Mickey Mantle or Babe Ruth or the current great baseball players hit a home run and they went around the bases, they came back and waiting for them between third base and the plate were his team members who slapped his hand. Doesn't exist in talk radio. Everyone's out to cut the other guy's throat. There is no team. There is no team in talk radio. There's no team in television. Those girls on Fox News, you think they love each other after the show? I wouldn't want to be in that locker room. So that's the human condition. That's what we live with. You don't complain about it. And within this human condition, some thrive and some die. It's that simple. Some rise and some fall. That's the way it is. So I got nothing to complain about. I mean, I've never missed a meal in my life unless I wanted to. As a friend of mine said to me this morning, he said, you know, I realized just this morning I'll never miss a meal for the rest of my life. I'll never want for food. I said, so what, I'm supposed to sit here and say because people are starving to death in Yemen, I should be happy? You ever hear that one? Because they're starving to death in Yemen and I'm not, I'm supposed to be happy. How does that work for you? Never worked when I was a kid. When I leave my food over, then parents would say, think of the starving children in Europe. I didn't even know what they meant. What do I care if they were starving in Europe? I didn't want to eat the milk. I didn't want to drink the milk and eat the food they were giving me. That's all a kid knows. Are adults any different? I think we're all extremely personal in our feelings. I don't think it matters what's going on in the world around us. And yet, you can let it get to you, and it can eat you alive, the political world. But most of us don't. Our happiness and our sadness, in my estimation, is based not upon political machinations, but upon what's going on in our own life. Meaning in our own garden, in our own body, with our own family, with our own ego. That's all that really matters to us. The rest doesn't matter at all. I think the rest is a construct. In other words, what I've come to a long time ago, if you want me to philosophize for another minute without boring you to death, is that many of us will take what's going on outside of us and relate to it as though that is what is affecting us, when it's only a reflection of what is really going on within us, and we're just using the outer world as an excuse to reflect our inner world, if that makes sense to you. So I feel as though we're in a sort of seminar now in a room with 30 people, not 3 million people or 9 million or 50 million. I don't know. Who knows how many people listen to a radio show? It's a guesstimate. We don't really know. And I'm not going to sit here and trumpet and boast about my ratings or my number one bestseller. It means nothing to me right now. What matters is the fact that I chose to go on the radio today. In the old days, I wouldn't have gone on the air today. I'm not in the right mood for radio. I'm a little down, you know, and I'm not so interested in politics anymore. I can get it. Not today, anyway. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, I worked to get Donald Trump elected, and for what? What happened? What did I get for it? I don't mean what did I get. What did we get for it? I didn't look for a job. What did America get so far? Nothing. Now, we know that the 50% of the political structures against him, we knew they would be. Democrats, socialists, whatever you want to call them. So 50% of the political operatives are against him. Now take his own party. And what would you say? What percentage of them are opposed to him? 50%? Probably. Maybe even higher. So if you take 50 and 50, and it's not 50 and 50 makes 100, it's 50 because 50 of 100 is 25. Of that is 75% of the political world opposes Donald Trump, which about reflects the actual popularity of him right now. It's that bad. I'll be back to talk about this and more on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Okay, forget Pavarotti. It's not what they want to hear today. They want to hear Dems bad, Republicans good. But the fact is they just pushed the vote back on this another 30 minutes. Big deal. Like it matters to me. I could care less. When you have low-life, degenerate rap stars attacking the president, calling for his death. When you have filthy bums of every stripe calling for the death of conservatives and the so-called Secret Service does nothing. While those of us on the other side of the aisle, if we sneeze, we're investigated by the NSA. You know, I didn't make a big deal of it, because you dismissed it, many of you, thinking it was nothing. I disclosed to you this Monday that I've been snooped on by the NSA for a number of years, and I never made a big deal of it. It's a huge deal. But it doesn't matter to you. Now, if I were a black, liberal, gay, progressive, I guess it would be front page news across the newspaper landscape. Black, gay, liberal, spied on by Trump's NSA. Why, they'd bring the house down, wouldn't they? But white conservative Trump supporters spied on by NSA by that rat bum Obama, that didn't matter to you? That sneak who's still conducting the government in absentia, that doesn't matter to you? This can't go on. This won't go on much longer. I said this before. I'll say it to you again today. Trump is a businessman. He's trying to run the country like a business, which he can't do. It cannot be done. Now, years ago, I wrote a book where I said, run the country like a business. But then I amended that several books later when I came to understand you can't run a country like a business. Because in a business, you have dictatorial powers. Even a public company, if you're the CEO, you have an awful lot of latitude. You can fire people. You can hire people. You can cut the budget. You don't need to go to anybody for it. You can't do it in a government. Thankfully, we have a sick, broken system that doesn't permit that, or else it would be a dictatorship. Donald Trump is emotionally, I don't think, prepared for what he's living through. That's not a criticism. It's a statement. It's a reality. He's used to getting his way. And just do it my way or get out of here. That's how he run a business. He can't do it. He's got to learn the art of the compromise, not the art of the deal. The art of the deal, in the way he was doing it, was not compromise. It was making it happen. It is not working with this crippled government.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So we're talking about loss. We're talking about the loss of a nation. It's not that I'm sad about the health care bill. I think it's nonsense that they even pushed it. I know why they did it. They made a blunder, huge blunder. If they had asked me and no one did, what should they have put first? It would have been a tax bill, cutting our taxes. Help the small businesses out there. Rebuild the steel mills. Rebuild the businesses that have been hollowed out under from the Clinton years forward, let's put it to you that way. Go to Pennsylvania, take some of your billionaire friends, show a skeleton of a factory that used to be running around the clock, and say, this town of Western Pennsylvania is going to be living again. It's going to be great again. Because my friend, Mr. Whatever, Schmendrick, is going to invest $12 billion in rebuilding the steel mill. That's what would have been done, should have been done the first minute. Who pushed him into this? Who in his inner circle told him, go with the health care? Never meant that much to most people. It was a fanatical group on the right, and I'm not against them, but it was not the right priority is the whole point. And now they're blaming Bannon. They're saying the bull in a china shop did this, pushed him in this direction. It's only a matter of time until something goes on in that inner circle. But that's a separate story. Is it really that, you know, depressing to the average person? That's not going to affect you today. That's the whole point. Taxes would affect you today. If you heard that he was cutting the general income tax from 39.5 for the upper income earners to 25, and he was cutting business taxes where they belong, like to that of the standards of the rest of the world, and he was eliminating the death tax, which China, the communist China, doesn't even have. Communist evil Russia doesn't have a death tax, Nancy liar Pelosi. No death tax in Russia. No death tax in China. But your goon put in a death tax, doubled it after Bush. So you work your whole life and leave a farm to your kids. And this corrupt, evil, communist, Marxist government that creep Obama put in place says to the kid who inherits the farm, if the farm's worth $1 million, you owe us $500,000. The kid has to sell the farm to pay the taxes to this corrupt, evil government. So Trump could have said, I'm eliminating the death tax. That's it. End of story. Wouldn't that be a shot in the arm for millions of the deplorables out there? Wouldn't that have been a shot in the arm to the rest of us who are waiting for some kind of relief somewhere? No, but no, we got nothing because he's listening to the wrong people. The bull in the china shop, the barfly, they're all whispering in the ears, sending them in the wrong direction. So that's what I'm talking about, loss. You know, that's the generic political loss. Why are these rap stars calling for his death not investigated by the Secret Service? Why aren't they pulled out by their filthy, dirty outfits and put into jail for threatening the president? We want justice in this country. We're sick of it. We deplorables want justice, or you're not going to have any peace. I warn you. I warn you as I'm sitting here, and I don't know who they are. I don't know where they are. I don't know when they're going to strike. I'm warning you right now, everyone listening. All you smug, nasty liberals, you're used to getting your way through bullying, sneering, and controlling the dialogue. I warn you, there are millions of people out here ready to snap. I don't know when, I don't know how, but if this keeps up, there's going to be a revolution in the country. A civil war will occur. And when they snap, it's not going to be pretty. It's going to be very ugly. Schumer, learn to compromise. Maxine Waters, put some glue in your mouth. Pelosi, you're not fooling anybody. Feinstein, you're full of it. How dare you say to Gorsuch during the hearings the other day, Dianne Feinstein, are you going to be for the little guy or for the big corporations while your husband, God bless him, is one of the biggest contractors and biggest, most successful businessmen in the world? How dare you pull the wool over your own eyes? Do you actually think these idiots in San Francisco believe a word you say? Do they actually believe you? I went to San Francisco to dinner last night. I don't even want to go into how bad it was. It is the dirtiest, brokenest city you could ever imagine. I'm trying not to see it. You need to drive a 4x4 with snow tires down Van Ness, down Lombard. The entrance to the Golden Gate Bridge is like a fourth world nation. Where is all the money? Where's the Department of Transportation money, Nancy and Diane? Where did it go? Where did all the federal money for these highways go? Where did it go? You can't figure out where it went? You can't figure out where it went. There's not a street in the city that isn't broken, except on Pacific Heights, near their homes, by the way. If you drive high enough on Pacific Heights, it goes from black tar to concrete and it's paved nicely. Everywhere else, it's like living in the fourth world. Every street's broken up. You can't drive here. Come out of a restaurant, a filthy bum is walking around the most vile curse words imaginable. This is right on Columbus Avenue in North Beach. Walking a deranged, homeless white guy is cursing people sitting in outdoor cafes, wives, children, doesn't matter. The dirtiest words you ever heard. And no one could get up and smack him in the face. Cops look the other way because they know they'll lose their job if they arrest the poor, sacred piece of garbage homeless man. That's a city to live in. You talk about civility, it's all being swept under the rug. And the garbage in the street. If you actually look down, you're walking through fresh garbage. Where's the Department of whatever they call sanitation? There's a lot of them around making a lot of money, 40, 50, 60 grand a year to clean up the streets. Where are they? You never see them. So I got so angry, I wanted to take my camera and start doing the real San Francisco from the street up and post it on YouTube. I wanted people to actually see how broken the city is. And then I wanted to say what a liberal city actually looks like. I'd show it to you from the street up. Not the postcard view. Not the high rises going up downtown, the big towers going up, but what it's like to actually walk in the streets of a decaying, degenerate municipality ruled by corrupt liberals. But I didn't get around to it. That's the city I'm in. I don't feel like ever going over the Golden Gate Bridge again. This is how civilizations die, when you have corrupt politicians. And they get away with it because there's no press in the city, virtually no press, zero. There's no newspaper. Can you imagine living in a city where there's no newspaper to keep the politicians in line? Imagine your city, because that's the city you live in. There is no newspaper. Used to be a newspaper would keep the politicians in line. They looked for scandals amongst the politicians. So the politicians were afraid of the reporters. Well, now there's no reporters, are they? They're all in the pocket of the machine. So this is the world we live in. That's all. So you go behind closed walls. You live behind cloistered walls. You live in a gated community, and you mind your own business. And that's how civilizations die. But I wanted to make it more personal, and I asked you, Loss, a segment on Loss. People listening to the show wanted to get personal. When the vote comes down in 20 minutes, I'll give it to you. Big deal. We know what it's going to be already. It's going down. It's going down. Oh, it says a family show. I was going to say it's going down like, but I forgot it's a family show. I'm not in a bar. Let's just say it's going down like the Hindenburg. Let's put it to you that way. It has been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill. refusing to get up. Suddenly, I hear a chorus of birds announcing a clear day. Quickly, I pull aside the curtain, push open a window, and see the beautiful sun shining and glistening, and the forest looks like it's having a bath. Ah, is this not happiness? I read this stuff over and over again when I was 18. This is in that great book by Lin Yutang, but it's really from Qin Sheng Tan, a 17th century Chinese scholar and playwright. I remembered his name, Qin. I didn't remember the Sheng Tan. And he wrote these 33 happy moments that Lin Yutang included in his great book, which pulled me out of a dive when I was 18 during my sufferings of young Werther phase. Let's see another one of those. It's a little stuff. This is pretty stuff. Oh, here's one last one. I wake up in the morning and seem to hear someone in the house sighing and saying that last night someone died. I immediately ask to find out who it is. I learn that it is the sharpest, most calculating fellow in town. Ah, is this not happiness? Yeah, that happens once in a while. They even get heart attacks. One of them got one the other day. I wasn't allowed to mention it. One of the most evil Stalinist humans in American history had a heart attack. Funded by Soros, smeared me for his entire life, former conservative, became a so-called progressive, a communist through and through. Ah, was that not happiness? I like that part. It's been raining for a whole month, and I lie in bed in the morning like one drunk or ill, refusing to get up. How come we can't do that anymore? Well, I know we're not in the 17th century, but have we lost the ability to be human? Did you ever want to just lie in bed? But oh, I got to get up. Let's do those. Let's work those abs. Let me have that useless breakfast with no carbs and no food in it, devoid of all nutrients, and I wonder why I'm devoid of any energy. Why don't you want to just lie in bed on a rainy morning? No one lies in bed anymore. You have to be productive. If you got to be productive in America, the great machine must keep running. Put your shoulder to the grindstone and push the wheel, my son. Don't be a wimp. Be a real American. Get up out of that bed. Don't be a slacker. Push, push, push. Push the wheel of the economy, my friend. Yeah. This is nice stuff. Let's see. Teddy's sick. I'm really unhappy over that. He's getting old. I don't know. Oh, here's a nice one. I am drinking on a winter's night and suddenly note that the night has turned extremely cold. I push open the window and see that snowflakes come down the size of a palm, and there are already 3 or 4 inches of snow on the ground. Ah, is this not happiness? I love this. You know how happy this used to make me? To realize that life could be reduced to simple things instead of these great flights of fancy or achieving. To cut with a sharp knife a bright green watermelon on a big scarlet plate of a summer afternoon. Ah, is this not happiness? Is poetry dead? I realize it's not as good as the rappers of today. I get that. I understand it's not as poignant as killing a president or, let's say, killing white women, as one of them wrote. I realize it's not as refined and as advanced as that of the rappers of today and of the professors of a certain area of study. But, you know, the ancient Chinese poets did as best as they could. They weren't as evolved as our class of artists in America. To keep 3 or 4 spots of eczema in a private part of my body and now and then to scald or bathe it with hot water behind closed doors. Ah, is this not happiness? You understand what I'm saying to you? You get this? The humanity that was still basically an animal or monkey? To find accidentally a handwritten letter of some old friend in a trunk. Ah, is this not happiness? Poor scholar comes to borrow money from me, but is shy about mentioning a topic. And so he allows the conversation to drift along on other topics. I see his uncomfortable situation, pull him aside to a place where we are alone, and ask him how much he needs. Then I go inside and give him the sum, and after having done this, I ask him, must you go immediately to settle this matter, or can you stay a while and have a drink with me? Ah, is this not happiness? Do you understand the humanity in this? How beautiful this is? This is 17th century Chinese poet. You know, he couldn't exist in Mao Zedong's China any more than an artist can live in Barack Obama's America. So we are now living in the realities of our world, doing the best we can, spied on by little men, little women, Lilliputians spying on human beings as though it's the norm when they should be thrown in prison. And we're talking about loss. What loss? We lost our freedom. We lost our privacy. But what is supposed to do about it? Well, we elected Trump. He was supposed to straighten it all out. So now he's caught in the quagmire of Congress. Okay, let me take a call. WABC, Andrew Line 2, what's your comment today? What's the topic?
How you doing, Doc Savage? I'm calling out personal loss, but I feel like I lost as an American. Like, I'm losing my, not patriotism, but my Americanism. The country's so divided, and it seems that one side...
Wait, it was divided before Trump was elected. It's still divided.
Yes, it was. And
Obama divided America unlike any division I had seen in my lifetime since the Vietnam War. Obama specialized in putting blacks against whites, whites against blacks, police against crook, crook against police. Obama divided and conquered with the help, a little help from his friends. He got by with a little help from his friends. We can name them all. These are people that thrived on division, that used division to rise in society, and they're still using division behind the scenes to keep society divided. Thank you for the call. I don't want to labor on it. It's just like I'm going down, you know, like the dumb roller coaster. I mean, my mind was one place, and Andrew took me to another. I'm not knocking you, Andrew, but I am in a way. Yeah, it's not like I don't want to talk to anybody right now. Do you ever want to lock yourself away and not talk? And here I am, a talk show host. I got to talk. Then I got to, like, read ads in a minute. I mean, I'm really in a great mood today. This is a great day to lose everything, but I won't do it, I guarantee you. I'm just not in the mood to do anything except be on the radio and talk with you about poetry, science, art, opera, human emotion, psychology, entomology. I want to speak with you about ideas, the things that make us great as humans. I'll be back in a minute to do so. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Well, our president has gone down to a defeat. House Republicans, lacking votes, pulled the health care bill at the last minute. What can you say? They undermined him. It's like A2 Brutus. They undermined him. They set him up for a fall. His own advisors who pushed this forward before tax relief are the real villains. They are the real villains. They're the ones with the long knives. You'd expect the obstructionists to do what they did, which is to not want Obamacare appealed. I mean, don't expect them to go along with him. But when his own party stabs him in the back and he was led down this road by his so-called inner circle of advisors, you have to say, who are the advisors? Well, read Julius Caesar and you'll know a little bit more about that. Which side are they on? Remember this, no matter who anyone is, they're all advancing their own career. They're always out for their own end. And that's why leaders always have to watch out who they let near them and who they let whisper in their ear. And the only people you can trust when you're at the top are people who don't need anything from you. And they're hard to find because most everyone needs something. So this is the problem. If you have ambitious people around you, you're in real trouble as a leader. Maybe I ought to write, General Savage's advice to leaders. Maybe that'd be a good book. Who knows? House Republicans pull health care bill. So I think I'm going to do something odd now that I covered health care for the day. I mean, if it was another radio show, it's 3 hours of this now. Why they did this, and inside that bill is that, and I suggest that, and we put this in and the mandate, and the mandrake. I'm going to mandrake. I'm not doing it. I almost sounded like that guy I used to love. Who was that guy in the Lenny Bruce era? That great black, he actually was, who was that guy, that great black comedian who wasn't black? Lord Buckley. Like, see Lord Buckley in the next hour. It's Friday. Let's have some fun. Let's get Lenny Bruce, Lord Buckley, and I'm going to read you something you're not going to believe. I'm going to read you the last two pages of my God book. That's right, you're going to get a special treat right here in the Savage Nation. You made Trump's war number one. Wait till you see the God book next year. Actually, it's this year.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Yay, yay, yay. I could do that, but not today, not in the mood. Thank you. So talk about loss for the first hour. My Sturm und Drang, I was dragging you through something that I wanted to go through because I was there. And I cannot do a show without being me. Let me put it to you that way. I can't fake it. I'm not happy today. My dog is sick. It's raining. Success is a stale finale. All of that stuff. Now I wake up and I see Trump lost for the first time in his life. And it's connected to loss. How is he going to handle loss? Please don't wipe it away and say it means nothing. And the true believers are going to say, oh, he's such a genius. He planned this to lose so that he could win. That's not what happened. It means he lost. And as the Washington Post is proudly reporting, gleefully at that, it casts doubt on the GOP's ability to govern and to advance other high-stakes agenda items, including tax reform and infrastructure spending. Paul Ryan is still without a signature achievement as Speaker. And the defeat undermines Trump's image as a skilled dealmaker, willing to strike compromises to push his agenda forward. I told you the same thing. Skilled dealmaker, willing to strike compromises. He doesn't know how to compromise. See, I told you the art of the deal is not the same in business as it is in government. We have a cumbersome, rotten system that works in its own strange way. It's set up that way so that we don't have a dictatorship. It's what prevented Obama from running over us altogether, was this cumbersome system. So here's the first big vote of the presidency for Donald Trump, and bingo, it goes down like a dirigible over New Jersey. It caught fire. The helium caught fire in the dirigible. The left will celebrate. But as Representative Bradley Byrne of Alabama said, and he was going to vote for it, he said, so much about political power is about perception. And if the perception is that you can't get your first big initiative done, then that hurts the perceptions down the road about your ability to get other big things done. Answer, get rid of Ryan. The only answer here, from Michael Savage's point of view, is get Paul Ryan out of there as fast as you can. He's your Brutus. He's Brutus. He put the knife at Trump's back. So anyway, that ends the political portion of the show. Now I can go back to what I really want to talk about, which is loss. He lost. You know, it's another big question is how is Trump going to deal with this loss, since we're talking about personal loss? Here's a man who I don't think lost very much in his life. He's a winner. Remember that movie Wall Street with Michael Douglas? Gecko, remember that? Greed is good. Remember that movie, that great movie, where he tells the young kid greed is good? So is that kind of like always win, always win, always win, always win, crush the opposition, roll over everyone, whatever you have to do, win, 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 from the beginning to the end. So we elected him president. He won. Now managing the presidency is quite another story. Not prepared for it. Bad advisors. Bulldog is wonderful during a campaign. After the campaign, the bulldog is put into a doghouse. You get rid of the bulldog. You take the bulldog and put him in a doghouse. I don't mean you throw him out altogether. You give him something else to do. Whatever it may be, with no jokes. I don't know, but you get him out of the inner circle because he misleads you. Cheerleader during the campaign, pollster, great. Take credit for it, wonderful. Then she makes a buffoon of herself and everything else and makes you look like an idiot. Get rid of her. Move her somewhere else. Get her a job somewhere in New Jersey as blueberry queen, whatever you have to do. Queen of the blueberry fields. Get her out of there. They're steering you in the wrong direction, Captain. I'm just saying, you know. Look, it's a talk show. What do you want to do, like read scripts to you here? It's not like a live script I'm reading to you. This is a man talking to you as though we're in a bar or a restaurant somewhere. Here's what happened today. Now, having done that, I want to read something to you, which is the end of my God book. I've been breaking my brain trying to figure it out. Of the making of many books, there is no end, wrote Ecclesiastes. I never met him, but he would have been a heck of a writer. So now I'm riding the top of the charts. Just think about it. I'm a rock and roll singer. I have a number one single that hit the top of the charts. Maybe it's only there for a week as number one. And it falls to 3, 4, 5, drops off the list. But I hit number one, okay? Don't take that away from me because you can't. All you naysayers out there, all you literary geniuses who still can't get out of the starting gate, but you know if only someone didn't block you, those evil what? Fill in the blank. Who run Hollywood, fill in the blank. Those evil blanks that run publishing, fill in the blank. Oh, those evil agents, fill in the blank. If only they weren't in your way, everyone would know how great you are. No, it's not true. You're not great. No one knows you because you're not worthy of knowing. So I've spent my whole life getting where I am. I'm now on top of the charts for the second time in my life. So I now have a God book to do, which I have 20,000 words written, put on the side when I was doing the Trump book. So here's the end of the God book. Are you ready for it? Raise your hand if you want to hear this. If not, I'll go back to talking about Trump and the Obamacare. Well, which would you prefer? I think you want to hear the end of the God book, right? Or not? I don't know if I have the time. I'm building up. Okay, I'll read the end of it. Okay, so it starts with a guy I knew who was a World War II veteran who was, you know, not really working anymore. He was on Social Security, tall, lanky guy, lived in an SRO in San Francisco. I got to know him a bit, and we'd spent a lot of nights together, sometimes up in his little room cooking a sausage on a skillet on an electric plate in those days. Left the Navy in 45. 46, became a butterfly collector, lived in a tiny room. You'd never know he's a butterfly collector. You just call him a right-wing cracker, but he had a great sensitivity to him. And he'd sit up all night listening to all-night talk radio shows. And I wrote he devoted himself to it as other men did their jobs. And now at that time, I didn't listen to talk radio. He did. So he and I get to know each other. And he gets arrested for carrying a gun in San Francisco. The judge dismisses the charges for a number of reasons. Charges him with a misdemeanor. And it goes on, and I say, we have a few drinks together. We stop talking for a few months after I gave him a few free bottles of reishi mushroom, and he didn't even offer to buy me a beer. For God's sakes, when they couldn't pay the country doctor in the American town of the distant past, they bought him a barrel of apples. But I had saved him from sure death at the claws of cancer 10 years before, and the bond was too short to break over a temporary impasse. By removing him from the VA hospital up on the bluff overlooking the Golden Gate and putting him on 30 grams of vitamin C a day, plus other vitamins and a diet of some herbs, I pulled him back from the diagnosis of lymphoma and being sent home to die, the best that the VA doctors could offer him. So I said to him, Barry, I went to a funeral last week, my friend Harry's father. You want to hear about it? I almost called you to come, but they didn't have enough people there. There was no one there. He nodded, sipped on his beer, and settled back to listen. One thing about his generation and his culture, they were good listeners. Harry's father, Henry, was 82, I began. He survived Auschwitz, where the German bastards cut his three fingers off his right hand in a saw just for fun. I watched Barry's face. It was, as I expected, guarded. After all, I'd met this SOB in a bar about 12 years ago when I stood up to his anti-Semitic ravings. We quickly became good but guarded friends. I can't read certain things that I write here. It'll be in the book. It's a little too hot for the radio. And then I say, so Barry shut his mouth that night many years ago, and as I've said, he tends to harbor certain Nazi sentiments. So when I told him about Henry's mutilated hand, I wasn't surprised at his lack of immediate pitying sounds, but I like a challenge, so I went on. Henry never cried about his hand, I told Barry. He came to America with Florence, who he met somewhere over there, had a family, namely Harry. He was full of life, this Henry, a big drinker, loved women, beat his son with a strap, but a big personality. Barry nodded. I think the anti-Semite in him liked the never cried part and beat his son part. So I proceeded with my funeral story. I'd lost touch with Harry for a few years. His wife threw him out for beating her and at least one of their daughters. And he was in one of his episodic hidings, this time from the sheriff's department. Somehow I heard that his father, Henry, had cancer and was dying. So I called his mother and went over a few days later. We brought a bag of groceries, you know, a French bread, a pound of sliced turkey, some wine, some vegetables, quarter milk, I think. The usual stuff you bring when someone's sick, poor, and housebound. Florence and Henry greeted us at the door of their little one-bedroom apartment on Van Ness Avenue. I always liked it there, remembering the few dinners they invited us to. Having been in the antique business like my deceased father, Benny, the place was filled with oversized, high-quality furniture and paintings. Henry was in a bathroom in a gigantic English armchair, shrunken but beautiful in a way. He pulled me close and said, Michael, I remember when you took me and Harry to Berkeley 20 years ago. I know you almost 20 years. That's not a short time. You took me to a bar afterwards on Telegraph Avenue. Those were the good times, Michael. Now is the bad times. Barry, I prodded you. Hear this? I extend one good deed 20 years ago, and this guy remembers. It's like one of the best moments of his life, this one good drink. So he goes fast into the hospital where he insists they let him out, probably to die at home. And 3 or 4 days later, boom, it's over. Like that? Harry told me he had been sick most of the night, vomiting, probably those toxic chemo chemicals. He forces himself up and says, Harry, she's there. On your left, the angel of death. Harry gets scared. He says, Pop, there's nobody here but me and Mom. Henry stares at the big chair across that small room. To your right, he says to his son, on the couch. She's here. He's here with her. He stands up, starts to walk across the room, and collapses. I can see that even the anti-Semite, Barry, is tearing up, wiping them from his face. Listen, you racist, I said to him, looking at that hole in the ground with Henry's casket so bare and hearing the rabbi's ancient chant and watching the young Mexican gravediggers move by the chant, I became reminded of my own hole waiting. I never knew where I wanted to die, I whispered to Harry's friend from Israeli intelligence, and I sure don't know where I want to die. We never know where we're going to die, he reminded me with a 70s rocker's cackle and grin. We never know where we're going to die, he reminded me with a 70s rocker's cackle and grin. And that's the end of the God Book. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Gallup's happiness poll finds Americans aren't happy. So I did a show today on loss. And we got calls on people who've lost things. And I may get to you, I may not. It's very hard to manage it all. And then I read to you the end of my God Book, which I thought was stirring, and not one person heard it. Well, maybe it was so good that no one could call on it. What can they say about it? That's what I'd rather talk about, but you can't. So I go to the news. Here's the news. Trump lost. How is he going to react to this loss? How will a man who was used to winning, a billionaire, how will he react to loss? This is an interesting question to me from the psychological point of view. The average person suffers losses and learns how to deal with it. The super winners are not used to loss. You know, there's a song from the 70s, I've been down so long it's starting to look like up to me. Most of us know how to pick ourselves up when we're knocked down, brush ourselves off, and go on with life. The people who are not used to losing, when they do get knocked down, I don't know if they can get up again that readily. I don't know how he's going to react. I think that's a great question for me. We don't know what he's going to do. Is he going to come out humble, do you think? And he's going to compromise with the jackals? He's going to compromise with the psychopath like Nancy Pelosi and Charles Schumer, those two psychos? Or is he going to come out with all guns blazing and try to crush them? It's going to be one or the other. He's going to be totally humble. He's not going to come out in the middle. He is an extremist. All successful people are extremists, myself included. Make no mistake about it. That's how we get where we are. We get this way because we're relentless. We never stop. That makes us unique. Now, he's a special case. He's the president. So how is he going to handle loss? How is he going to do this? I don't know. This is going to be interesting. No one knows the answer to that either. How will Trump handle a big loss? Healthcare bill pulled at Trump's request. That's all. Let's go to Derek, the caller. WABC line 4. What's on your mind, Derek? Go ahead, please.
Hey, how are you?
Derek, you're on the air. You're on the air, Derek. Fire away.
It's Eric, not Derek. It's okay. Great loss. I've lost a lot in my life. I've lost 2 businesses, a girlfriend at the time. I was divorced, and then I remarried and had a son, and we lost the son, and, you know, lost my job, lost my home for this mortgage modification thing from Obama, which they might have.
So how do you handle all of these losses? I mean, you don't sound like you were defeated by it all.
No, to top it off, no insurance, and I'm blind in one eye now as of a year. How do you handle it? Certification, perseverance, you just, what am I going to do, lay down and die? you move on.
I mean, I'm saying I'm not knocking. I'm asking you what you do. What's the mental gymnastics you have to go through to keep yourself going? Like, I don't want to. I mean, what did your son? How did that happen?
Zach died 5 months after he was born. He had a cerebral hemorrhage. So.
All right, still a phenomenal loss. You never get over it. So what do you say to yourself? It was God's will? What do you do?
Broken heart.
No, but okay, but what do? You say it's God's will?
Well, I kind of lost my faith at that time, you know? So my dad, who's 93, God bless him, he says if you can get up every day and go to the bathroom by yourself, life is good. There you go. That's it. And people cry, you know, they break a nail and they cry. You know, it's the end of the world. You know, Obama did this to us. You got Trump. He's trying. My 93-year-old mother-in-law says, give him a chance. You know, the guy's only in office for 3 months. You know, crying out loud.
Yeah, why don't you say that to the compassionate Charles Schumer? The compassionate Chuck Schumer. So look, my friend, you say your way of coping with great loss, and there's no greater loss than what you've suffered, the losses, and here you are struggling along with one eye, is you just say the struggle is the success. You just keep working. You keep doing it, right?
You keep doing it. You know, it's like, why did we fall? To learn to pick ourselves up, you know? You keep going.
That's like a beautiful statement. I think you've helped a lot of people today who have self-pity. And, Eric, I want to thank you for holding so long on the show. I'm going to send you my number one bestseller. It's a collector's item now, Trump's War. The book will be a collector's item. You know, it's interesting. Every number one bestseller becomes a collector's item when you think about it. Because there aren't a lot of number one bestsellers. I don't know if you know that. Oh, ho-hum if you live in San Francisco and you write in a cafe and no one will ever publish you. But you know, a number one best-selling book is actually a collector's item. First edition. Yeah, think about that one. So the name is Savage. The first name is Michael. The show is The Savage Nation. I'll be back to take your calls.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Raining like crazy out here in the San Francisco area. It'll sweep away the garbage in the streets. The bums will have to go inside. The junkies won't be shooting up in front of your mother-in-law. It's a cleansing day here in San Francisco. God, I was in the city last night. It's so disgusting. You drive down the busiest streets in this city, Van Ness, Lombard. You'd think that you're in a fourth world city. It's beyond comprehension how corrupt these politicians are. And the dirt and the bums and the filth. Swept under the rug by the non-newspaper. Yeah, no car. Oh, you lucky you live San Francisco. Yeah, you clowns, you're lucky you live San Francisco in a city where another woman was assaulted last night and almost killed near the Sunnyside housing projects. And you rats in the newspaper won't report who the perpetrators were. You losers, you. WDRC Greg, line 7, what's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, thank you for taking my call. I found myself very deeply focused while you were reading the ending of your God book there and mesmerized. It had me thinking about putting a couple things together where Trump had commented to you that we need you around for another 25 years. And that's after beautiful. Listening to that, I couldn't agree more. And I would hope that you would do a deal. I know this is going to sound kind of morbid, but I would hope that you would do a deal and get somebody to put your books on tape for you that could express your heart and your emotion in your writing.
Well, you know, I it's interesting. I don't usually read my own books, but I think I'm going to read the God book and do an audio of it because it's truly from my heart in that sense. The political books are very left brain, very thoughtful, very logical, very important, very impassioned. But the God book is going to be something different. It's going to be a sort of semi-autobiographical travel through my life. Because I look back on my whole life, truthfully, Greg, my agent even said to me, he said, virtually everything you've ever done has been a search for God. Every plant you picked in the Fiji Islands, you were looking for God in every plant. Every seed you collected, you were looking for a proof of God's existence. He said that to me just the other day. But I'm glad you heard it. I don't know how many people hear what's said on radio. When I read the end of the God book about the funeral and the Israeli intelligence agent, the end of that the line I decided to end the book with was, "We don't know where we're going to die," he said, with a 70s rockers cackle. I thought that's a great ending to a book, isn't it?
It is, and it actually shocked me, the ending of it. But please let me tell you that I was raised in a very deeply Christian family. My mother was a chair lady of the Christian Women's Society, and I've been listening to you again now for about 7 years after, as all of us do, stumbling away from Christianity. And now that I've been listening to you, you've brought me back, and I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that. How did I bring you back to your religion?
Well, you're a very common guy to me. You're very down to earth. I can very much relate to you, and especially with this reading that you did in this God book. It's very life-like to me, and you're just your.
Well, the scene of the man dying of cancer in the last hours of his life, and the funeral, and the Mexican gravediggers, and then the statement that was made by the two or three people were at that grave. That's all it was. I was one of those three, and the other guy was a friend of the son of the guy who died, and I didn't know he was in the Israeli intelligence until another time. And I laughed at him. I said, "I don't know where I'm going to die." He said, "None of us do. We don't know, blah, blah, blah. We never know where we're going to die." I thought that was a very poignant ending to that book.
It certainly is. It actually, again, it shocked me.
You see, because here's the thing. People expect me to write some hokey kind of, God book that's going to be preachy and all of that. That's not me. It's not going to be that. It's basically going to be a personal, it's an odyssey, a man's odyssey through his own life, searching for the proof of God and finding it and losing it, finding it and losing it, and then finding and losing it, and finding it and losing it. That's basically it. But at the end of the day, there's no solution other than, there's no conclusion to the question. Each person has to go through their own odyssey, don't they?
They certainly do. I lost my mother to 3 rounds of breast cancer, and the third one finally took her at 78. And a beautiful Christian woman that I couldn't possibly give her the right credit.
Right, and you don't know why God would do that to a righteous woman. Why would he make her suffer?
Right, that's right.
All right, why would he do that? Why doesn't he reserve it for the real evil of the planet? How many times have we asked that question? Why does some of the most evil bastards on the planet die a ripe old age in their bed? Why do the evil dictators like Joseph Stalin die in his bed, who killed 60 million people? Why do the evil, evil, evil ones, why do they seem to skate through life? How is that? We don't understand it. None of us do. The suffering children, the cancer wards, the leukemia wards, the little children without hair in these hospitals. You don't know what to do with this. Enough to make a strong man break down. He doesn't know what to do with these things. So how do we get through it? I don't have an answer for the next man. The thing is, each of us has to get through it ourselves, right?
We certainly do. I've seen the...
And there's no guide. There's no guidebook to certain things. And that's the whole point of almost everything I want to say today, is there are no guidebooks to certain events in our life. No guidebooks, no goalposts, no field. We don't even know what plane we're on. We don't even know if we're walking on Earth sometimes when bad things happen like this or great losses occur. The Earth comes out from under our feet. Then where are we? What are we left with to hold us together?
We will all be humbled before we go.
I'll just send you a copy of Trump's War. It's a first edition, first printing. Trust me, you're going to love reading that book. It's all I've got to give you right now. It's a great book. And I hope that you call me when the God book is actually out, God willing, and I read it on the air, because that one's going to be read on the air piece by piece along the way. It doesn't have to be delivered until July, thank God. Oh, God. I called my agent the other day, the day I heard that Trump's War was number one. I said, "Ian, when is the God book due? What's the word length?" I don't even remember these things. So he had to look it up. He said 75,000 words. I said, "Are you kidding me?" I said, "I've only got 20,000 right now. I can't produce like locks and put it on a plate." He said, "Well, okay, whatever. You can do what you got to do." So then I read a story this morning about a man who just died. He's 88. and he wrote like 200 books. So I said, that's encouraging. He just never stopped writing. He worked 7 days a week in his writings, you know. And then I'm reminded of how I've been driven in my life in many ways by the writings and the readings that I've done. And I never forget stumbling upon the great sculptor Rodin's writings. People don't know that he wrote. Most great artists do everything. They paint, they sculpt, they write. You know, if you get their journals, you see how they really thought. So Rodin, you know, the thinker, if you want to just generically put him in a category, we have a great collection of his here in San Francisco at the museum up there on the bluff. The I don't remember who what the museum is. The Palace of the Legion of Honor. It's a small museum. It reminds me of a private collection, but we have a great Rodin collection. I've often gone there. I haven't gone recently, but maybe I'll go this weekend. Who knows? So Rodin wrote, work is the only salvation. Work, work, work. It's worked for me to work, work, work. I got to tell you, to bury myself in work. And that's what's always worked. People say, how do you do it? How do you do a show? How do you do the books? Work, work, work. Never stop. How do you turn a mind off? Can you turn your mind off while you sleep? I can't. I would like to develop a machine, a piece of equipment. I don't want to say machine. It's antiquated to say machine. I would say device, since an electronic device that I could plug, turn on at night. And I'll bet you we have this in our lifetime. And it records our thoughts and dreams all night long. And it translated in, it digitally translates it into the typed and the visual form. I would have, in the morning, 7 movies, 8 books every morning. It's like a chicken laying eggs. Do you think your brain goes to sleep? Does your brain go to sleep? People are afraid to think that their brain never stops. Now, this is a great question unto itself. Why do you think some alcoholics are alcoholics? Why do you think some drug addicts are drug addicts? Well, part of it is that they can't stop their mind, and their mind is generating a lot of negative thoughts for them, and they're scared. They can't take the pain. So they drown the pain in drink, drown the pain in drugs, drown the pain in running, drown the pain in sex addiction, drown the pain in chocolate addiction, drown the pain in talk radio addiction, drown the pain in pain addiction, drown the pain in pain pill addiction, drown the pain, you know, so I'm saying, so, okay, vicissitudes of existence kind of thing. But there's another way, which is just live with it. Let it run. Don't block it. Don't be afraid of it. It's not you. Disconnect yourself from your thoughts. That's another little trick I learned a long time ago. I shouldn't give up all my tricks right now. It's like I'm Merlin the Magician. If I give away too many of my tricks, I'm liable to lose them. But I'll share one more with you, which is, let's say you got negative thoughts running through your head. You don't know what to do to stop them. Oh, I'll take a pill. I'll go to the doctor. I'll run. I'll go to the gym. I'll use drugs. I'll take a drink. Temporary will work. Good for you. We all do it. But what if it keeps going on and on and on? Can you see a psychiatrist? Can he help you? If he does, God bless him. Good for him. I'm glad he can. There's another way, which is disconnect yourself from the thoughts. They're not yours. They're just there. They're floating by like bad clouds. Okay? Just look at the thoughts as though they're there. There goes another dark thought. There goes another dark thought. There goes another dark thought. And eventually the dark thoughts will just keep moving. And then the clouds will become white again. I mean, that works too. There's a lot of techniques that people taught and learned in the 70s that were phenomenal in the self-help books, by the way. And many of them have been forgotten. We've become a nation of narcotized, medicated individuals who don't even want to think about how to do it with our own heads. So, I mean, I try to bring, you know, all of this to the talk show. That's what talk shows are. A talk show is generated by a man or woman who talks on the radio. That is what a talk show really is. In the genre I'm in, I mean, there are other formats. There's television talk shows, which are not the same, because you cannot create this level of intimacy with a television talk show. It's impossible. You're too exposed to reveal yourself in this manner. That's the deficit of being visualized to millions of people who you're speaking with. You become a sort of a different person. You have to become Rigoletto, is what I was playing, Pagliacci, rather, at the beginning of the show. You literally have to put on the makeup, and you have to put on the outfit to do that. And then the minute you put on the makeup and the outfit, you're no longer the same person because you are hiding something. Talk radio was a lot different, I think, just speaking from my own point of view, because you're just expressing yourself to the audience without thought about how you're being received visually, because you're not being received visually. You're being received in another manner. And that other manner in which you're being received is a very primal manner. when you think about it. You're receiving the voice of the man, and what is the voice? Now, think about that. I don't know if enough has been written about voice itself, but voice itself is magical and mystical all at once. The voice carries the person, if the person is really opening up to you. And if the person's really opening up to you and you're able to receive it, again, now let's look at it from the listener's point of view. If you are listening to me on the radio, you're opening your mind to me, a stranger, in a way you'll never open yourself up generally to a person you know. Because it's safer to open yourself up to me and let's say people listening to the show and even call the show. Whereas you can't do this in person because it's too revealing and it's too threatening. So this becomes one of the most precious formats left in the world. Primitive, old technology, AM talk radio. There is nothing that I see to match it in terms of communication. That's one man's opinion. That's why I'm in it. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Michael Savage back with you. Let's talk about blood flow for a moment. We all know that healthy circulation is critical, especially as we get older. Well, there's a natural way to support healthy blood flow, and that's by getting enough dietary nitrates into your body, which convert into nitric oxide. I've told you about it, and that Super Beets is the easiest way to get these natural dietary nitrates. You see one scoop in water or a smoothie, and you're all set. That's the secret to helping support healthy circulation and healthy blood pressure levels. Super Beets works three times faster to give you results you can feel. And it happens to taste great. It's all about blood flow. I take Super Beets every day, and I can feel the energy and stamina it gives me within 20 minutes. So call 800-481-0504. That's 800-481-0504. Or go to SavageLovesBeets.com. Write it down. That's SavageLovesBeets.com. You're going to get a 30-day supply free. It comes to your first order. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. You're also going to get a free book, Beat the Odds. And also free shipping on your entire order. You're going to love the results you'll feel with your first free canister. It's guaranteed to get your money back, so call 800-481-0504. And now we come down to earth. Now we come down to earth again. Now we come down to earth. And here we see Humpty Dumpty. Humpty Dumpty. Paul Ryan has to go. Brutus has to be fired. If the Republican Party and Donald Trump does not get rid of Brutus, it's all over. Brutus Ryan will undermine him every step of the way, as he has been doing from the beginning. He cannot compromise with the rhinos. Now, I know and you know that there was a war going on inside the inner camp from the get-go. I know and you know many of the people who now support him, both in his own party and in the media, hated him and fought against him every step of the way, and they never changed their hatred. Well, now we see the result of it. He is bruised. They pulled the bill at the last minute. And we're going to live with Obama's Castro care for the foreseeable future. Prices are going to go through the ceiling. You're going to have to pay for the care of illegal aliens, drug addicts, sex maniacs. You're going to have to pay for the care of sex deviants, sex maniacs, drug addicts. You're going to have to pay for the care of those who abuse themselves on purpose. It was a Frankenstein. It's not being repealed. And as I told you in Trump's war, they voted 60 times, fakely, to repeal under Obama. 60 times they faked it. Now Trump is regretting he should have done tax cuts first. And who's he blaming? I don't know who he's blaming, but we know who steered him down this road to this loss and saw the president go into a ditch. We know who did it. The bull in a china shop and the blueberry farm. And unless he understands that blueberry and bull are not his best friends, kaput, finito, that's all, nada. He's got to get rid of the inner circle, and he's got to change the inner circle, and he's got to change the Speaker of the House. End the story. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
What's going on inside that White House today, I wonder? Do they even know who Pagliacci is? One of the most moving in the operatic repertoire of all time is this aria that I'm playing for you about the tragic clown smiling on the outside but crying on the inside. We all know about it. I mean, we're all a clown at the end of the day. Woman, man, doesn't matter. We're all a clown. Laugh, clown, at your broken love. Laugh at the grief that poisons your heart. Turn your distress and tears into jest, your pain and sobbing into a funny face. Ah, don't we all do that in a way? Politicians do it all the time. We know that they're all great actors. And so we see the act going on today. And the act is an act of loyalty when it's an act of treachery. And the solution for Donald Trump is quite clear. Blueberry and Bull must be moved out to pasture. Paul Ryan must be moved away from the speakership. And I'm not Nostradamus. I'm Michael Savage. So that's it. That's the whole deal. He got hurt today, badly, gored. Maxine Waters is celebrating right now, probably drinking. God knows what she drinks to celebrate. I wouldn't want to know, to be frank with you. Maybe Schumer's having a double seltzer tonight with a little Fox's You Bet syrup in it to celebrate his defeat of Donald Trump's attempt to straighten out a form of socialized medicine that is a disaster for everyone, especially those of us who have to pay the bill. So, yeah, they tried to do a noble thing, but they didn't do a very good job of it. They didn't appeal to anybody. They certainly weren't going to appeal to the people who pushed in the socialized medicine, are they? You wouldn't expect them to vote with them, no. And the Republican Party, you figure there'd be a few fanatical liberals who wouldn't oppose it. But he had such a gigantic job of overcoming the rhinos, as I pointed out in Trump's war. It was doomed for defeat before they even began. Never should have done it. The one thing they should have done, they didn't do. Let's take some calls on the Savage Nation. How will Trump handle such a big loss? What is happiness? What is loss? We did all of that today. I think the day would be better if I played one of the worst people in American political history. A little sound from us. You know who we're talking about. Maxine Waters is probably the most fascistic Stalinist in the Congress right now. Nancy Pelosi is admittedly a lunatic and laughable, and she's not going to be there forever. They claim she might retire finally after she destroyed the Democrat Party with her stupidity. I mean, that was the latest article that I saw about her. So how long can she be there? They're calling it the long goodbye of Nancy Pelosi. Long goodbye? How long can she enjoy stepping on people with those high heels is the question, when she's destroyed the Democrat Party? She shouldn't be the face of the Democrat Party. But you got a Maxine Waters again calling for Trump to be impeached, and now she wants Nunez investigated. Do you understand that she is a fascist? Do you get it? Do you understand that just because a person is a woman or an African-American, they can also be bad? Do you understand that that applies to all races and all sexes? Do you understand good and bad applies across the board? What's wrong with you people? Well, you can't say a word about her? She's crazy. She wants the head of the committee who released the information that the NSA was spying on Trump to be investigated? She's a Stalinist. Listen to clip number 4 and you'll see who I'm talking about. The worst woman in Congress.
We need an independent investigation. We need an independent counsel. And we need to get the House Intelligence Committee out of the business of so-called doing the investigation on Trump and his associates and trying to find out whether or not they interacted with the Russians during the campaign, whether or not they were in collusion.
All right, here is a woman who doesn't know the difference between Crimea and Korea, acting as though she knows what's going on. I would like an investigation of Maxine Waters. I would like to see who she has collusion with. I'd like to see if there's any collusion between Maxine Waters and some enemies of democracy. I think we need to get on to finding out really what happened so that we can make sure that those people responsible will be brought to the bar of justice. I'm using her own words. Who is she colluding with in her mad insanity? Actually, there was some good news so far, which is that the Keystone Pipeline has been approved, and it is a great day for American jobs. So let's play clip number one. Let's have some good news today. Okay, let's go to that one.
Today, I'm pleased to announce the official approval of the presidential permit for the Keystone XL Pipeline. TransCanada will finally be allowed to complete this long overdue project with efficiency and with speed. We're working out the final details as we speak. It's going to be an incredible pipeline, greatest technology, known to man or woman.
Let's stop. I don't want to hear incredible anymore and great. I'm sick of it. You want to change some of the descriptive terms. Incredible. I don't know how a pipeline can be incredible. It's a credible pipeline. It's not incredible. Maxine Waters is incredible. Nancy Pelosi is incredible. A pipeline cannot be credible or incredible. It either exists or it doesn't exist. It's a great thing because it'll bring oil from the Alberta tar sands to a refinery in America so we can have fuel at a lower price and let the Arabs go pound sand where they belong. Then they'll stop exporting their hatred. That's all. The faster the Saudis are put back into the desert to run around with camels and beat people up with whips, the better the world will be. The faster we bury them with oil from America, which we start exporting, and stop bringing oil in from those psychopaths, 7th century exporters of hatred, the better off the whole world will be. That's all. Next case. Let's see what else is on the audio log. 14-year-old girl raped by the illegal aliens. Did you hear the judge's defense? Your hair's going to stand up. I don't even want to read it to you. I guess you're close enough to a breakout here in this country. Catch and release of the illegal alien who raped the 14-year-old girl. Raped by the illegal aliens from Mexico. Oh, you don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear what his lawyer said. The lawyer for the guys who raped the 14-year-old kid, you don't want to hear it. I'm not going to read it to you. You can find it yourself. Imam calls for killing Jews in Montreal mosque sermon. Where's the ballet dancer to arresting the mosque guy? Imam calling for Jews to be killed in sermon at Montreal mosque draws police complaint. Look at this piece of turd. Look at them wearing like Ku Klux Klan outfits in there. Because they're not white outfits, they're not Ku Klux Klan. If a Ku Klux man got up there in a white outfit and called for the death of Jews, what would happen? Probably be on the Today Show. Larger Muslim community wants apology from mosque and wonders why controversial imam was invited to speak. You know, one thing I got to ask about these imams is they're real heavyweights. They're fat. What do they eat? What, do they knock off a lamb a week? These are not vegans, these guys. You look at them, they're big, stocky, fat guys. They eat very well here in America. They eat like pashas, these guys. Video of an imam delivering a sermon in which he asked for Jews to be killed surfaced online. The Dar al-Arkam Mosque in the city's Saint-Michel neighborhood, December 23rd, 2016. I think the mosque ought to be closed down. Now, did he make these words up? No, the verse comes from a religious text known as a hadith, which interprets the words and actions by the prophet Muhammad. In the video, the imam recites in Arabic the verse, O Muslim, O servant of Allah, O Muslim, O servant of Allah, there is a Jew behind me, come and kill him. That's all. Now, if it was Obama in the presidency, I suppose this imam would be invited to the White House to do the invocation at a religious sermon. He's accused of inciting violence, but they did nothing in Canada. It's against the law, but they did nothing in Canada. Mosque didn't apologize. They did nothing in Canada. Canada is dying because they invited such hate-filled individuals into their country. This is the second complaint against the Montreal area mosque filled with the Montreal police's hate crime unit. Now, just think about this. They come to this country or Canada. They live on welfare, most of them. They knock out 7, 8, 10 children. And you're letting it go on like it's normal. What can you do about it? I get it. Nothing. There's nothing you can do about it. Because we have no leadership. They're busy hating Trump instead of stopping the haters. Instead of Schumer, who's of Jewish descent. I mean, let me be clear about my distaste for Schumer of all of them. He's a powerful Democrat with a tremendous authority. When has Schumer last talked about such events in his public speaking? Why does Schumer invest such hatred for Trump and rarely, if ever, says anything about hatred like this in America? Murder, killings, mayhem, rap stars calling for the death of the president. Hating of the Jewish people themselves, never a word said by Schumer. Anyone have an answer for that? I do, but it's a family show, so I can't tell it to you. But I think you can figure it out. This Schumer type existed through history, in my opinion. There was a thing called the Sanhedrin. Raise your hand if you know what the Sanhedrin was. I want to see if you're actually listening. Let's forget it. It'll get me in more trouble than I'm already in, so I'll leave the Sanhedrin out of it. Just let me put it to you this way. The Sanhedrin was a council of elders that judged Jesus. And not all of them in that Sanhedrin voted for Jesus to be crucified, but some did. I'll let you figure out which side of the aisle I think a certain person is on. So that's one story, but you're not interested in it. I think you'd rather I just read from the God book or something like that. Breaking news, Ryan Trump canceled voted on Obamacare repeal, but we know that. Boring. There's a solution. I gave it to you in the last hour. You ready for the solution? You want the solution? Blueberry and Bull get put out to pasture, and Paul Ryan is taken down from the speakership because he just shafted the president. Trump now must know who Brutus is. If he doesn't know now, I don't know when he's going to know, but what can he do about it? Can he remove a speaker? No. The rhinos put the speaker in to undermine the president. That's why he was put in place. The day is going to come that Donald Trump, maybe in 6 months, is going to have to change the entire circle around him, and he's going to have to bring people in who have nothing to lose, have nothing to gain by talking with him, who don't want anything, or not conning him, not conniving him, not gaming for a this or a grant or a contract, not trying to get a position. Those are the only people he can trust. Everyone else is out for something and not to be trusted. It's just common sense. You run a big business, you run an organization. I don't care if you're a gang leader, you know what I'm talking about. A guy running a gang knows that. That if you set up like this, it's the people within your own circle who are doing it. So what do you want me to do? I'm just like calling the shots as I see them. I'm just an umpire here of what's going on. I don't dictate what's happening. Look at the headlines. Trump retreat on healthcare deals body blow to rest of agenda. That's what they wanted. They knew if they could take him down on this, the rest of his agenda is going to go sideways. So that's what happened here. Disintegration of the Republican health care plan now undermines Trump's deal-making reputation. It now emboldens those in Congress out to challenge him at every turn. Failure breeds failure. Success breeds success. This is a disaster. So where does he go from here? I just said where he has to go from here. Alfred on WFJX Radio in Virginia, thanks for calling. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I was just thinking about your comments earlier. I was listening to you describe AM radio as outdated and antiquated, but I had this thought actually listening to you. I'm listening to you on an iPhone, and I think you have millions of listeners listening to you on high-tech devices, phones, you name it. And here is the brilliance. Here is your brilliance.
But I was being sarcastic when I was saying that little old primitive antiquated AM radio is the most powerful method of communicating to the masses. That's what I actually said.
I do get your sarcasm, I absolutely do, but I have an added thought that I wanted to share with you, and that is you're a guy who's talking about everything from the bums in San Francisco to Rodin to Auschwitz, and you take us around the world five times in 3 minutes. And
well, do you find it too distracting to move around like that?
No, I love it, and I think your audience loves it, and that's what makes you're brilliant. You're a national asset, and that's the magic to millions of people listening to you. You're like nobody else because you literally spin us around in a brilliant, poetic way five times.
Yeah, it's interesting what you just said. Yeah, I did go from the streets, the broken streets of the city, to Rodin, back again, up and down. It's all in there. Does it mean I have a confused mind?
No, it doesn't mean
that at all. It means that all these elements are out there to talk about.
Absolutely, and it's so brilliant, and you present it literally in a poetic way. You're a national asset, truly. You are.
Well, thank you. Tell that to President Trump. Maybe give me the National Medal of Freedom when he gets around to it.
Well,
imagine if I got one of those a couple of years from now. That would be nice.
I think
I'd like to give that to my granddaughter. All right. Hey, my friend, I'm sending you Trump's War, which is a brilliant first edition, first printing book. I know you're going to love it. I'll be back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Well, loss is what it's about, my friends, and the harder they come, the harder they fall. The bigger you are, the harder the loss is to take. Most of us normal folks have had many losses in our life. Think about it. Since you're a child, I mean, you've had loss, I've had loss. And we learn how to roll with the punches, and we learn how to go on, dust ourselves off, you know, salve our bruised egos, put arnica on our wounds, whatever, a Band-Aid, mom gives you a kiss, and you go on. But if you are a really big person in society and you lose, and they don't lose that often, they wouldn't be that big, other than the inheritance cases, let's put it to you that way, and they're in the worst shape altogether. Those who inherit large sums of money are generally the most screwed up people on the planet, because they always have insecurity that they've never done anything with their lives, and I pity them, frankly, that they have such terrible doubts about themselves. It's not something to glorify. So you take a guy like Donald Trump. I don't know how many losses he's had in his life. Today was one of the major losses of his life. It's not just that the health care bill was pulled because Ryan stabbed him in the back. Look, Ryan is the Brutus here. Let me be very clear. Ryan is the number one issue is Ryan. In addition to Blueberry and Bull, Ryan has to go. But the question is, how is Donald Trump going to handle this loss? He put a lot on the line when he got up there and said, vote on it or you're liable to lose your seats. Remember that? He put everything on the line. He's a gambler. One thing I know about big people is they're not only bold and courageous, is that they're also big gamblers, every one of them that I've known. The big ones always gamble. They're willing to throw it all on one move. Well, he threw it all and lost on this move. Now, the question is, how does he come back from it? Does he come back a humbled man? Or does he come back with all 16-inch guns blazing off the deck? I don't know right now. I'm not his advisor. I'm only Michael Savage, talk show host, the author of the number one bestseller, Trump's War.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I'm not happy today. My dog is sick. It's raining. Success is a stale finale. All of that stuff. Now I wake up and I see Trump lost for the first time in his life. And it's connected to loss. How is he going to handle loss? Please don't wipe it away and say it means nothing. And the true believers are going to say, oh, he's such a genius. He planned this to lose so that he could win. That's not what happened. It means he lost. And as the Washington Post is proudly reporting, gleefully at that, it casts doubt on the GOP's ability to govern and to advance other high-stakes agenda items, including tax reform and infrastructure spending. Paul Ryan is still without a signature achievement as Speaker. And the defeat undermines Trump's image as a skilled dealmaker, willing to strike compromises to push his agenda forward. I told you the same thing. Skilled dealmaker, willing to strike compromises. He doesn't know how to compromise. See, I told you, the art of the deal is not the same in business as it is in government. We have a cumbersome, rotten system that works in its own strange way. It's set up that way so that we don't have a dictatorship. It's what prevented Obama from running over us altogether, was this cumbersome system. So here's the first big vote of the presidency for Donald Trump, and bingo, it goes down like a dirigible over New Jersey. It caught fire. The helium caught fire in the dirigible. The left will celebrate. But as Representative Bradley Byrne of Alabama said, and he was going to vote for it, he said, so much about political power is about perception. And if the perception is that you can't get your first big initiative done, then that hurts the perceptions down the road about your ability to get other big things done. Answer, get rid of Ryan. The only answer here, from Michael Savage's point of view, is get Paul Ryan out of there as fast as you can. He's your Brutus. He's Brutus. He put the knife at Trump's back. You know, and I'm not so interested in politics anymore. I can get it. Not today, anyway. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, I worked to get Donald Trump elected, and for what? What happened? What did I get for it? I don't mean what did I get. What did we get for it? I didn't look for a job. What did America get so far? Nothing. Now, we know that the 50% of the political structure is against him. We knew they would be. Democrats, socialists, whatever you want to call them. So 50% of the political operatives are against him. Now take his own party. And what would you say? What percentage of them are opposed to him? 50%? Probably. Maybe even higher. So if you take 50 and 50, and it's not 50 and 50 makes 100, it's 50 because 50 of 100 is 25. Of that is 75% of the political world opposes Donald Trump, which about reflects the actual popularity of him right now. It's that bad. I said this before. I'll say it to you again today. Trump is a businessman. He's trying to run the country like a business, which he can't do. It cannot be done. Now, years ago, I wrote a book where I said run the country like a business. But then I amended that several books later when I came to understand you can't run a country like a business. Because in a business, you have dictatorial powers. Even a public company, if you're the CEO, you have an awful lot of latitude. You can fire people. You can hire people. You can cut the budget. You don't need to go to anybody for it. You can't do it in a government. Thankfully, we have a sick, broken system that doesn't permit that, or else it would be a dictatorship. Donald Trump is emotionally, I don't think, prepared for what he's living through. That's not a criticism. It's a statement. It's a reality. He's used to getting his way. And just do it my way or get out of here. That's how he run a business. He can't do it. He's got to learn the art of the compromise, not the art of the deal. The art of the deal, in the way he was doing it, was not compromise. It was making it happen. It is not working with this crippled government. It's not that I'm sad about the health care bill. I think it's nonsense that they even pushed it. I know why they did it. They made a blunder, huge blunder. If they had asked me and no one did, what should they have put first? It would have been a tax bill, cutting our taxes, help the small businesses out there, rebuild the steel mills, rebuild the businesses that have been hollowed out under from the Clinton years forward, let's put it to you that way. Go to Pennsylvania, take some of your billionaire friends, show a skeleton of a factory that used to be running around the clock, and say, this town of Western Pennsylvania is going to be living again, it's going to be great again. Because my friend, Mr. Whatever, Schmendrick, is going to invest $12 billion in rebuilding the steel mill. That's what would have been done, should have been done the first minute. Who pushed him into this? Who in his inner circle told him, go with the health care? Never meant that much to most people. It was a fanatical group on the right, and I'm not against them, but it was not the right priority is the whole point. And now they're blaming Bannon. They're saying the bull in a china shop did this, pushed him in this direction. It's only a matter of time until something goes on in that inner circle. But that's a separate story. Is it really that, you know, depressing to the average person? That's not going to affect you today. That's the whole point. Taxes would affect you today. If you heard that he was cutting the general income tax from 39.5 for the upper income earners to 25, and he was cutting business taxes where they belong, like to that of the standards of the rest of the world, and he was eliminating the death tax, which China, the communist China, doesn't even have. Communist evil Russia doesn't have a death tax, Nancy Liar Pelosi. No death tax in Russia. No death tax in China. But your goon put in a death tax, doubled it after Bush. So you work your whole life and leave a farm to your kids. And this corrupt, evil, communist, Marxist government that creep Obama put in place says to the kid who inherits the farm, if the farm's worth $1 million, you owe us $500,000. The kid has to sell the farm to pay the taxes to this corrupt, evil government. So Trump could have said, I'm eliminating the death tax. That's it. End of story. Wouldn't that be a shot in the arm for millions of the deplorables out there? Wouldn't that have been a shot in the arm to the rest of us who are waiting for some kind of relief somewhere? No, but no, we got nothing because he's listening to the wrong people. The bull in the china shop, the barfly, they're all whispering in the ears, sending him in the wrong direction. Didn't he say that he would not let Muslims into this country? And what did the Schumers and the Feinsteins and the Pelosis have to say when he did that? Racist, this is, that is. No, he was a survivalist. And these psychopathic left-wing idiots are suicidal lemmings, and we have to ignore them and push them aside or they'll take us all over the cliff. Trump said he would ban any more Muslims from entering this nation. And what did he do? He tried to put in even a travel ban, and these sick people on the left called him every name under the sun and blocked him. One filthy judge in a dirty robe. Who is that piece of garbage judge? Who is he? Who is that filth? Did I elect him? Did that piece of garbage hiding behind a black robe, did he run for office? No, he's a left-wing nut. How did one nut in a filthy black robe stop a president? It's because he is backed up by the sickest people on the planet, suicidal leftists who will kill all of us unless we let Donald Trump do his job. And that's just the beginning of what must be done. I have a dream that one day I'll wake up and Donald Trump will be able to rule America, and all of the psychopathic obstructionists will finally be voted out by their own party, who also decide they want to live, not to die. Which brings us to terrorism again. What is our plan for victory for this terrorism? I'm very pleased to tell you that I do have friends in the media. I have a few friends in the media. I mean, you know, the book's number one on the New York Times list, Trump's War, which is an awesome victory. You have no idea what this is. To be a man alone and to come out number one on the Times list. This is the first time I've had a number one bestseller in many a year. The first one was, hold on, I got to read you this. I went to my library and dusted off my first new one. I've had many New York Times bestsellers recently, five in a row, which unto itself is pretty awesome. Thank you for that. But in 2002, I published a book called The Savage Nation, Saving America from the Liberal Assault on Our Borders, Language, and Culture. That's the one with the great picture of me with the sunglasses, the iconic picture of me with the Golden Gate Bridge behind me that my son took in a snapshot one day on the back of a ferry boat or something. And the minute it was taken with the sun glinting off the glasses, it was an instant classic. And I look back on that book and I say, what was in that book that the people liked? They had never seen anything like it. So I looked at the outline of that book, From the Bronx to Broadcasting, Diversity is Perversity, America from the Melting Pot to the Chamber Pot, Christophobia in Praise of Christianity, Trickle-Down Immorality, Immigrants and Epidemics, TB Anyone, Dancing on the Cultural Abyss, Red Diaper Doper Babies Rule, and Crimes of the Democrats. It was only 200 and some odd pages, and I got to ask you, has anything changed? Has anything changed? We've lost the war thus far. Not. We haven't lost the war. We just won the election. But the suicidal deviants in the media are so devoted to their own self-destruction that they would deny us our own victory and deny us our own vote. They're supposed to be impartial. I don't turn a television show on for one day and not see an attack on Donald Trump or his family. Not one day passes without these perverts pretending that they run the world. Don't get me started now on the word pervert. Don't get me started on saying that it is not an act of Islamic terrorism. It's a perversion of a great faith. Don't get me started on that. Because I would say to you that the media today is a perversion of a great profession. Oh yeah, it's a perversion of a great profession. Journalism was once a great profession until it was perverted by these diehard fanatical suicidal maniacs who deny half the nation their own vote. But there are friends I have in the media. I have them here and there. I was in a few radio shows. No conservatives in the media will even mention my name because they can't compete with me, so they don't. As I said, only Mike Gallagher, who I really don't know. I don't even know what time he's on, but he did mention my book because he said, I'm proud to say that, you know, one of us, a conservative writer, is number one on the New York Times list, and he took pleasure in that. As he should, because he understands it's a battle. He takes it for real. See, he understands it's a real battle, and we're supposed to support each other when there's a victory in order to magnify the victory, in order to spread the message. But he's not bitter, he's not jealous, so he did it. Now I open up Breitbart, and I don't have any contacts with them, and I'm shocked to see that it's their lead story. How pleasant this is. Review, talk radio legend Michael Savage outlines his strategic plan for victory in Trump's war. By Colin Medine. This is unbelievable. I'm reading you one paragraph. Breitbart, Michael Savage. It would have been easy for Michael Savage to write a book after the election of Donald Trump that boils down to I told you so. After all, Savage is one of Trump's earliest supporters, but instead of taking the easy route, Savage has written Trump's War as Battle for America, a comprehensive battle plan for the Trump administration, ranging from his familiar topics of borders, language, and culture to economics and the deep state. I got to read this later because I do have honest people in the conservative media, and I want to thank everybody at Breitbart for overcoming all of the resistance that you must have in there to even mention my name. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Here we go into the final stages of boarding for boredom on the Savage Nation. I realize that after I go off the air, there's a vacuum that only I can fill. I'm not trying to be egotistical, but I know many people have their own shows that they like. Very few of you will listen to every show all day long. Some do, but the truth is we all have our own audiences with some overlap. And it's the end of a long Friday out here on the West Coast. It's raining, going to be snowing up in the Sierras. That means in a couple of days you're going to get a storm on the East Coast again. That's how it goes. Unfortunately, the weather comes from the west to the east. That's which way the wind blows. And if you're coming to San Francisco, I suggest you wear galoshes and surgical gloves. It's the most broken, dirty city in the world, a fourth world city. Don't believe the tourist brochures. I'm sorry to tell you this. I went to dinner last night in the city. You cannot drive on Van Ness Avenue. You can't drive on Lombard. You enter the Golden Gate Bridge. The roadway is broken. Where have the billions of dollars in highway funds gone? I don't know. Ask the folks who run the Bay Area where the money has gone. There's hardly a street in the city that's not broken. Bums walk down the street and insult you if you're sitting in an outdoor cafe. The police are not present because they can't be. They'll lose their job if they arrest them. If you stand up to a bum insulting your wife, you'll go to jail in this sick, upside-down city. It's becoming unlivable here. It's worse than a third-world city. Having said that, we'll go to the callers now on the Savage Nation. That's just the beginning of my experience in the city last night. It was worse than that. I can't even tell you what else happened. Eric on KSFO in the city of San Francisco. Eric on line 3, are you still there? Welcome to the program.
I am, Michael, and as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Last time we had talked, it was about Jacob's Ladder, and before that was the White Owl.
Oh, my God. So you're a very deep thinker. What's on your mind today, Eric?
Well, you know, you had said that Trump has not known defeat. I submit that I would treat bankruptcy as defeat, and he's known that a couple times before, and he has bounced back. The other point...
Well, that's a very good point. That is a very good point. And frankly, you're reminding me of something some of my father's friends told me. The wealthier ones in the circle, the guys who moved up from the immigrant status and from owning a small store into a higher level, used to say to us guys when we were growing up, never be afraid to take a gamble, because the guys that we know who are very rich have always bounced back from misfortune. That's the word they used to use, was bounce back over and over again. That's interesting, Eric. It just came back to me because of you.
Absolutely. And also, there is a victory here because Trump has absolutely proved his loyalty. And now he can say, okay, you owe me loyalty now with Gorsuch. Make it happen.
Oh, are you kidding me? You think Schumer and Waters are going to give him anything?
No. What's going to happen is he's going to turn to the rest of the Republican Party and say, okay, we are not going to have a filibuster. A filibuster is a rule of the Senate that you...
That is correct, but Schumer has said he's going to filibuster Gorsuch's confirmation hearings, and the only way to overcome it would be for the gobbler McConnell to do the atomic bomb that Harry Reid used and go from a majority to a plurality.
Exactly, and so that can be done. And what Trump is saying, essentially, look, I have shown my loyalty to...
All right, so what you're saying is Trump can now call his cards in and make sure that they appoint Gorsuch by going to the nuclear option that Harry Reid created. That's a fabulous point. I'm sending you Trump's War. because you obviously are a deep reader. I forgot that you called me on the White Owl. It's a beautiful, blessed Friday. Enjoy the weekend, enjoy nature, enjoy the family, enjoy your pets.